Hi, I'm Andrea McLean.
And I'm Nick Feeney.
And between us, we have had 5 marriages.
4 children.
3 divorces.
2 dogs.
Through sickness and in health, work and play, menopause meltdowns.
Teenage tantrums.
It is love, laughter and friendship.
And golf.
And Netflix that has got us through. And we would like you to join us as we attempt to...
master midlife.
Now, the theme of today's show is overcoming almighty fuck-ups. That is the theme of today's show. And the reason for that is because we watched the Beckham documentary, which I'm sure so many of you did. And while they really did overcome some almighty fuck-ups, whether it was career-wise, relationship-wise, and this sort of thing. So we have invited the incredible Jane Dockerill, who is going to be joining us to talk through that from a coaching and an expert perspective. So really looking forward to that. And you'll be really grateful to know that we're not going to be talking about our almighty fuck-ups because we don't have a long enough podcast to talk about that with us.
I was worried what you're going to say then.
So, Nick, you know how I love a bit of Netflix.
Absolutely.
Love a bit of Netflix. So this time I actually managed to get you to join in with me to watch something because more often than not we sit in separate rooms, don't we, when it comes to telly. But this time round we were united in a Manchester fashion.
See what you did there?
Do you see what I did there?
It's amazing.
Because
amazing.
We watched the documentary on the Beckhams, which was fabulous. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so, so keen to get our guest Jane to give us her thoughts on the documentary and takeaways on it. So Jane Dockerill, hello.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Hand on heart, I loved the Beckham documentary. Mm. I thought it was absolutely fascinating. And, you know, the proof of it was that I'd seen something about it, you know, in the media that it was on. And then I can't remember what I'd done. I'd gone to something that day and it was very much like a water cooler topic. Everyone was talking about it. So I thought, well, I'll give it a little go. Well, 1 a.m. in the morning, I'm still sat there watching it. Couldn't stop. I thought it was absolutely riveting. And for me, the one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, because obviously we're approaching it from a midlife perspective, was the idea that the Beckhams went through a very, very stressful time around about the time when there was alleged infidelity. It's never confirmed or denied in the documentary, but there was infidelity. Mm. And they made the decision to stay together. Now, what I found really interesting about that, and also reading different columnists' opinions and this sort of thing, is that very much the sort of social norm is... that's disgraceful and, you know, chuck her out, chuck him out, whichever, move on. It's an unforgivable thing and actually what you should do is start again afresh. And they didn't do that. Mm. And they stayed together and seemed to be such a strong, loving unit. And I found that really remarkable and impressive because as someone who has been on the receiving end of that and also someone who I had an affair in my marriage, that was how my first marriage ended, I understand that it's a lot more complicated than people think. It's not as glib as people think. So I was interested to hear your perspective on the dynamics of keeping a family unit together after what I like to call an almighty fuck-up. You know, in their instance, it was infidelity, but it could be something else. Mm. What's been your perspective on that in terms of the work that you do with children and with families?
I agree with everything you're saying about the documentary, and I had the very similar feelings from all of it. For me, in terms of a professional point of view, anything that creates pain in a family unit, disconnect, a period of uncertainty, children and young people are energetic forces and they feel it. So it doesn't matter what you say to them, they feel it. So you can say, we're okay, we just had a bad day. You can pacify as much as you like, but they know it. They know it. So, and the evidence is that children hear more when they're asleep than they do when they're awake.
No.
Oh, yes. So, you know, all these people...
That's a worry.
Well, we're going back to my years at frontline social care when I was working with domestic abuse and people say they don't hear it, we argue at night. sadly, they do. So in terms of advice, I would always say to people, acknowledge it, and be really honest. So when people will say, let's be honest, if you think back to your divorce and what you had to tell your children and young people, no one wants to tell them adult stuff, right? Because you can't hit the rewind button. You can't then take back the adult head you're about to put on their shoulders. So I always say to families, when there's moments of pain, you have to heal. So acknowledge the facts. Things are tricky right now. We are trying. We're doing the best we can. Don't commit to future long term. We're doing one step at a time and we're committed. We genuinely want to try to make this work. We have the best intentions, but we're navigating new territory. There's some pain here. We're both pretty uncomfortable. There's some uncomfortable feelings here. We're both feeling pretty in places we've probably never felt before. So bear with us. We will tell you what we can. We will share with you what we can. And we will also tell you if you need to worry. But for the time being, we're doing the best we can. And you are our priority. And this family unit is our priority. And this is why we're going to go through this journey to heal, to look at this pain, to look at whatever steps they need to take as a couple to work forward and work through that.
Mm. That's such beautiful advice. And I'm reflecting back in my circumstances. It was a very, very long time ago, and I know that for me, I felt so sick with guilt that I would do anything to smooth things over, to keep things as good as they could possibly be. And actually, what I ended up doing was I shouldered the full burden of responsibility for everything, which I know now with hindsight, it's clearly, I mean, I knew at the time it was not all on me, but I was prepared to do that for the sake of keeping things ticking along nicely. But that must be really challenging if both of you aren't on the same page, because there's so much pain and hurt involved. And Nick, you know, you're staying really quiet on this. I just wondered what your perspective was on it.
Got nothing to say. No, do you know what? There's a couple of things on there. You know, I also had an affair that ended my long-term relationship. And I look back on how I was in that. And without going into details into why I did it, because there will people listening to this that will go, anyone that has an affair is a bastard. Anyone that does that is out of order and all that. And the hurt it causes is. But the reasons why people do it, you know, I don't know anyone in a really, really happy relationship that goes off and has an affair. So I think, you know, and again, that's not justifying my own reasons, but, you know, as I reflect on it, I wish I could take away the hurt that it caused. But actually what it was a catalyst. It wasn't the reason why, but it was a catalyst that actually made me realize I had to make a decision.
And it always is, isn't
100%.
It? 100%.
And I couldn't keep playing. I couldn't keep almost smudging over here to make sure it's okay and doing things over here that aren't okay. But what was interesting is one of your points that you said there, I want to go back to it, is actually when we're talking with the children and the young adults, you know, and we're talking about these things, we say to them, oh, there's nothing to worry about. That's our sort of go-to. But there clearly is. But the way that you phrased it there was, we will tell you when there's something to worry about. And I think that puts it really nicely, because whilst, you know, they're still going to worry, what you've just said to them is like, you know, it's like, we know it's a shit show. We know we're working hard. We know we're doing all this. But we are intentionally going to be trying our best, because our goal is to stay together and repair the damage that's been done in this moment, which is probably what the Beckhams did.
Yeah.
You know, they decided that their lives would be better working it out and hopefully having a future together rather than actually just calling it a day, which again is on them. It's that's their choice. But then saying to the children, we're doing all that, we'll let you know. That's got to be really powerful and really also comfortable, isn't it, for the children?
But it's about connection as well, isn't it? So actually, in a place where things feel really unsafe and dangerous for children and young people, so we've just taken the foundations out from underneath them, right? You may as well have picked up the rug and pulled it. Mm. That's what it feels like. So what they need is they need, like you imagine the cruise ship, they need the extra stabilisers to come out. So they don't need to know the detail of why their parents hate each other, had an affair. They don't need that detail. Mm. And that's where we feel we need to do, we need to give them that to justify the action of the other one. They don't need that. They need to know they're safe. They need to know their parents are okay. And they need to know that if there's anything to worry about, you're going to give them a heads up. That's it.
In your experience with working with families, how common is it to see families that do decide to stay together after something like this? Because, you know, as Nick touched on, it's normally it's a symptom of other things that have perhaps gone wrong, whether one person wants to acknowledge it or not, because very often that's the case, that you know, that one person doesn't want to acknowledge that things have perhaps gone awry. How common is it for families to stay together, and what are the biggest issues, not just in terms of parents dealing with the kids, but outside forces as well that they have to deal with, whether it's, you know, friends that have an opinion and are being pretty vocal about it, family members that same, and also other kids at school that have maybe heard through their parents, their friends' parents about what's actually happening. How do you navigate those choppy waters to try and keep something that's actually so personal and private on track?
But again, so that again, for me, just it comes down to connection. So if you trust yourself to deliver the messages you need to deliver to your children, they'll trust you, right? Mm. So life happens and the shit does hit the fan and things go awry. It happens. But that connection of the home unit and that being able to close the doors and home is safe is so important. And if you navigate that and get that right, then actually what happens outside the doors is irrelevant, because science shows children only need their parents, if they're safe parents, children only need their parents to be able to guide them through life. And they will respond in the way that you respond, because we know our children mirror us. So quite often you can say, if you see your child's having a bad day, you can probably quite often put it back to something that you might have been going on for you too. So in terms of commonness of how often this goes on, I think it's unique to each family, because like you said, there has to be a lot there to work through a divorce, to work through an affair. And there has to be, because quite often you're right, in my experience, my first husband had an affair and that's why my marriage fell apart. Was it the affair why the marriage fell apart? Absolutely not. There was 100 million things wrong. That was my permission to leave and never go back. So you have to work through the detail of that, and that's adult stuff. So that's the bit that children really have to be protected from. So if you're committing to working through that stuff, you've got to have some really firm boundaries in place as to how you're going to navigate that in the family home, because that is the children's safe place. And that's where there has to be a non-negotiable in terms of how that unit feels for the children and young people within it. That for the adults, right?
I think that the Beckhams clearly got that right.
I agree.
And it made me laugh. Not that I read any newspapers, but I heard some comments about, oh, they didn't go into the details, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they forget that this is a documentary that they put together. It wasn't for anyone else apart from their perspective. So, you know, it was up to them what they wanted to talk about, how deep they wanted to go. And the fact that they touched on it, you could still see that there was a lot of pain.
Yeah.
You know, no one likes to talk about, oh, do you remember that time life was really shit? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
And also the time that I caused you pain.
Yeah.
Yes. And no one wants to revisit a moment where you really got something wrong. And you cause someone that you love pain. And I thought it was commendable that they even touched on it as they did, because the easier thing to do, and we all want to do the easier thing, no matter how loudly people may protest, if it was them in that situation, we would all want to do the easier thing, was they still touched on it. picking up then, just before we sort of wrap on this, is you're talking about children. We were sort of using it as an umbrella term. But clearly, if the age of the children is really plays a factor in terms of how much you tell them, how much they need to know. Because if they're really weeny, like, for example, my son was under two, so he clearly did not need to know details other than that he was very loved. And that things were a bit bumpy, but, you know, he was very loved. But if you have teenagers in the house, or even young adults, you know, we're talking about as if the family's still living together. You know, there are parents in their 60s and 70s that get divorced for all kinds of different reasons, or have a bump in the road and decide to stay together. Mm. They're still your children that you need to navigate these waters with. So what do you advise, if anyone listening is maybe in this experience now, sort of how much do you share and how deeply do you go into things depending on their age?
I wouldn't go into it, because I think, like I said, you can't hit the rewind button. Don't put an adult head on young shoulders unless you absolutely have to, because you can't rewind it. You can't take it back. And they don't have the cognitive maturity to manage it. So why would you give them detail that is just going to overwhelm them, hurt them, and confuse them? I just wouldn't. I would give them the facts of, like we said earlier, this is tricky, this is really hard, and we have had a detachment in our relationship, and one of us has caused the other one some pain that we need to talk about and work through. Mm. And at the moment, we're committed to talking about that pain and seeing how we can make each other feel better. Mm. So again, the facts that they already know, because they'll feel it. They'll feel the change and the shift. Excuse me. So give them, label the emotion that they're feeling, because that will make them feel safer. That'll create the connection. Mm. And also, when you're having a difficult conversation in the kitchen, snarling at each other, rather than try and plaster over that, they'll know this is the tricky conversation they mentioned. This is the bit that they're navigating. It's okay. We're navigating. That's what they said, we're navigating. So they'll know. Rather than go to school, not eat lunch all day, not be able to concentrate and worry sick, you've given them the language. They know. They know this is tricky. And being able to say that you caused someone else pain as well, own it. Own it. We have caused each other some pain. We've done some things to each other that were not the best version of ourselves. And we're going to look at that together.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Whether you are looking to stay together or not, is take responsibility for who you are and who you weren't.
Yeah.
You know, because then you can do something about it. Mm. And that's something, you know, I really do try and push on to anyone that I work with and coach, you know, because it's very easy to say, yeah, but they did that. Yeah, yeah. But hang on a minute. Yeah, what did you do?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're all just trying to get on. We're all just trying to live happy, you know, in relationships or with some wonderful people in our family and everything like that. It's not about, you know, everything being wonderful and fairy tale. These things happen. That connection, communication and responsibility. I think some amazing points there.
Can I put you on the spot then and ask you what... No, not Jane. You,
he's
young man.
Is it the Fifth Amendment?
You're going to take the fifth? What would you say that your biggest learning from it or biggest takeaway or moment of self-reflection in that, do you know what, I really got that bit wrong? Because all we can do as we move through life is look at the bits that we got wrong and think, do you know what? And I don't mean the obvious. I mean, you know, all the bits around it that I will make sure that I never do that again.
So the biggest thing for me that if I could turn back the clock is I would make sure that I wouldn't have the relationship until I had absolutely finalized the end of my relationship with my wife.
Mm.
Because the hurt it caused her was just unforgivable. It was just so unkind, you know. And whilst I had my reasons for doing it, that's the biggest thing, because we were already going through our own struggles. We, you know, the conversations were being had. I just should have shown some patience and allowed almost that bit to finish off, because now everything is about that. The breakup in our marriage is about that.
Mm.
And it's fair to say that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I would most definitely change.
I think for me, and obviously I can't ask you a question like that and not ask myself the same thing. For me, I think hindsight is an amazing thing. And if you could press rewind and do things again, life would be a lot tidier. For me, this realization has come with age, and it is, I can see so clearly now that I was trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. I was trying to make a marriage work that was never going to work. And then when it didn't, I felt so lonely and so alone, but couldn't see that so much of it was on me because I was trying to make something that was never going to be. And I just felt very, I don't know, I felt very unloved and all of that, which now looking back, you know, again, I'm talking about, I married my first boyfriend that I ever had from school. So, you know, I'd like to put youth and immaturity on as an excuse in there, but it's not. It's personality. I was trying to make something work that wasn't ever going to work. And the sad thing was I bloomin' did it again. So I'd like to think I finally learned now.
We do laugh in the house, right? All the girls, they say like that. Andrea loves a flag, but she's colorblind and doesn't know whether they're red or green.
No.
She thinks, oh, look, there's a flag. It's exciting.
No, do you know what they say to me? Mum, it's not bunting. It's not bunting. There's so many red flags. It's not bunting. But there we are. Jane, thank you so much for your insights on that today. So, so interesting. And I know you'll have... You know, I know we were talking about the Beckhams as our link into this conversation, but there'll be so many people listening who will either be going through this experience right now, and your words of wisdom will have really helped. So thank you for today.
You're very welcome. Absolutely. Thank you, very welcome. It's my pleasure. It really is my pleasure. It's a subject I feel very passionately about is just families and working through it.
So now, Nick, this is a moment where I think we are really both going to shine. Because seeing as we've, you know, we've spoken so openly about our flaws and this kind of thing, I thought we could carry on just one level further. Are you ready for this?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
Go.
Okay. You know how I love a word. I love a word that you think, oh, I wonder what that means. And yes. I came across this word the other day, misophonia. Do you know what misophonia means?
Is that where you, like, lose your phonia?
Oh, it should be. I like that.
Am I close?
No, but I like it. Okay. I like it very much. I like it very much. No, misophonia. I came across this on an interview with the Reverend Kate Botley, because she said that she has it. I like her very much. I think she's lots of fun. And I didn't know that there was actually a word for this. So misophonia is when you absolutely cannot stand it when people chew too loudly.
Mm.
Rage.
Mm.
Rage. Rage upon you for chewing too loudly.
Is that like chewing too loudly with mouth open? Like that, or just chewing too loudly? Because is there another word for chewing too loudly with the mouth open?
Maybe I could just phrase it chewing nastily.
Right.
Mm. Nasty chewing.
Mm.
Masticating nastily. There's a better word.
Say that again.
You nasty masticator. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know...
Hang on. I remember when I was a teenager.
Right. I'm really scared of what you're going to say now.
I first heard that word, mastication.
Yeah.
And we all know what it sounds similar to.
We do.
Oh, my God.
Lots of fun with that word.
Oh, my God. We thought we were so smart. We try to throw it in every sentence.
I bet there's a word for that. Really annoying teenagers who hear a word that sounds like a rude thing and bring it into conversation.
There is, but I won't say it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, I remember years ago going out to dinner with someone, and he was quite an important gentleman, and it was a business lunch, and he ate so horribly that I just thought, even if you offer me this job, I can't take it because I can't work with you. Because he ate so loudly and with his mouth open, it was disgusting. It was just disgusting.
Do you just think it's around table manners?
No, I think some people don't know they do it. You know, it's even just, you know, people who eat chewing gum loudly, or because that's not table manners. It's just general kind of thing. It's something that really, I find it rage-inducing. I get really quite cross about it. But when I heard about this word and I thought about, yeah, how ragey I got, I actually realized how ragey I get about so many things. This just kind of tipped me over the edge. I was like, oh gosh, I actually get quite cross about quite a few things.
Is this going to turn into a therapy session, or is this where I should be honest about some of the things that you get ragey about that you aren't aware of? Or no, I think
what do you
I
mean that just, I'm not aware of?
I think I should just shut up.
No,
now. This
would
is
you,
where
no.
I just listen now, isn't it? And go, yes, darling.
Stop pretending you're that guy. What do you mean things that I'm not aware of? I think I'm aware of everything that
you do get
I don't
ragey
like.
A lot. You love a little rage, don't you?
I mean, they're quite short rages. They don't go on for that long.
Oh, yeah,
long.
Yeah.
They're like little bursts.
You don't lose your bloody mind. But,
no.
Well, sometimes you do get a little excited.
Okay, what else do I get ragey about?
Just noise in general sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You're super sensitive to certain noises.
That's true.
And like, you know, also high-pitched noise.
So, for clarification, we have foxes in our garden, and I bought, you know, those things that you put in the garden? I can hear them. I can hear them. They drive me mad.
Because she's a fox.
Because I'm a... dun, 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 dun. I am, yeah, foxy. No, I think I just am on a very weird level.
Is that
level.
Foxy Bingo, by the way? That music
no, Wayne's World. Do you remember Wayne's World?
I thought that's really not foxy.
My teeth, I look more like a rabbit. That was terrible. That was terrible. No, do you remember we went into a certain juice place?
Mm-hmm.
Losing my mind again because there was music on really loudly. There was a machine that was beeping nonstop and people were just talking over the top of it. And I was like, they need to turn that thing that's beeping. They need to turn off that thing that's beeping. And please someone turn the music down. I'm very noise. I'm sensitive.
Yes, you are.
I am. Okay, go on then. What else makes me rage?
I think we'd say that for another podcast.
What don't you like then?
What don't I like? What gets to me? Do you know, I think the thing today, bearing in mind what it took to get here, is cyclists in London not quite sure whether to use a path, go in between, dart in and out, stop at a red light. You know, they just do whatever they want.
So erratic cycling.
But the thing is, you go, I've got no problem with people being on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the line bikes.
You
right?
do.
I love the line bikes.
Fact.
But if there's a red light, stop. Rules apply to you too. And that to me, I just think, you know, where that, I mean, I see some stuff where they try and squeeze in between bloody a bus and a car and you're just, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
You know, but that's not really making you ragey. That just makes you a bit stressed because the cyclist kind of weaving out.
No, because I do then call them names afterwards because I feel for the bus driver. I feel for the man in the car, you know.
Well, you're not playing this game properly. You know, I'm getting annoyed with people who chew too loudly and beepy noises in cafes. And you're talking about a legitimate annoyance, which is a cyclist going in between a bus and might get squashed. Say something ridiculous so I feel normal.
I think you just said it for me.
But do you know what I mean? You must have something that's just a bit more kind of out there because everybody gets annoyed at what I mean is everyone gets annoyed at anyone who behaves has bad road manners. I mean, you know, the fact that I don't like people who chew too loudly is kind of out there. Come on, match me.
I'm not sure I can match you. Because you have a star quality about those things.
Oh, thanks, babe.
That's all right, darling. But I don't get massively ragey, though, do I? Actually, hang on. You, when we go for a walk, and you walk like a bloody nana, and you tell me to slow down, because you walk backwards.
You walk
too
fast.
That's how slow you are.
No, you walk too fast.
That gets me ragey.
I know. It's the only... I was going to say the only thing we row about. No, we row about other things. When you drive too fast and you walk too fast.
Yeah.
They're the only things that we end up having a row about. I don't walk too slow. You walk too fast.
Yeah. I think we're going to start walking alone.
I walk too slow. You walk too fast. We walk alone. Shall we leave it there?
I think so.
Oh, I think that is a perfect place to wrap up.
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
Well, Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Jane.
And thank you for listening. Thank you for those of you who have been watching. And that is it for this episode of Mastering Midlife. Join us next time as we continue to crash through and try and find our ways to master midlife.